as I was thinking about today's message, we're going to be in Mark. And so if you want to start turning your Bibles to Mark, I have a little bit of a story that I reflect upon. The last couple of weeks, I was actually debating whether or not I was going to tell you this story. Because someday you may meet my brother. I'm going to talk about my brother here, who I love very much, who lives 1,500 miles away, so it's much easier to talk about. But anyway, my brother and I are 2 years apart, and we look fairly similar, and at different times in our lives, we've lived similarly. And a few years back, I'd say at least 10, maybe even more, me and my brother, we lived a little bit ungodly. We liked to party. And so one day, I wasn't with my brother, but my brother got in the car, and Vegas is like 4 hours away from Orange County. And so my brother gets in his car, and he takes his paycheck, and he goes out to Vegas. And my brother likes to gamble and drink and party. And so my brother pulled up to one of the tables, and he began to gamble and party and drink. And he was just with his buddies, and they started to get a little rowdy. And so my brother started mouthing off to the pit boss, who looks over the dealers, and he was mouthing off to the dealer. And then my brother, frankly, just got crazy belligerent. And he decided that he was going to do whatever the heck he wanted to do. So he got up and started walking around, he was offensive to the security guards now that the casino had, and so the security guards come up to my brother, and they're like, you know, you need to mellow out. And he says, no, I'm not going to mellow out. And so my brother gets belligerent with them, and they start a scuffle. And now the police, so Metro police, have to come in, so Clark County Sheriff or whoever comes in. And now they're going to arrest my brother. Because of these crimes that my brother was beginning to commit, because of my brother's transgressions, the way that he was going against the policies, going against everything that place was standing for, and his behavior got unruly. And so I don't know when this happened, but they put the cuffs on him, they put him in the car, and they eventually took him down to the police station. So this isn't a good situation. Are you sensing that any of this is good? This is not a good situation. So my brother's in big trouble. My brother had never been arrested at this point. Actually, I don't think any of us had at that point, so he was really breaking into new territory for the Garmin family. But my brother gets arrested, and there's gonna be charges against him. And so they said to my brother, they said, who are you? My brother pulled his wallet out, pulled out the ID, and he handed it to the authority. And they said, you're Sean Garmin? So he gave them my ID. So all of the things that my brother had done was now placed on me. So if anybody tells you I'm a convict, all of these things that he had done wrong were placed on me and in my name. When he got back from Vegas and I found out through my sister, him and I had some words. Some very heated words. Because I want to tell you the truth. I didn't want to be his scapegoat. And to be honest, I think I even said the words, I'm not your whipping boy. I'm not the guy in between you and punishment. My name's not going to take that. And I ask you this question. Who, in their right mind, take the punishment when they weren't guilty? Who in the world would be a scapegoat? Who in this whole wide world would be a scapegoat? Today we're going to find out. Let's look in Mark. You'll turn to chapter 11 with me. We're going to find out if anybody, though they are innocent, would be a scapegoat for the guilty. Today we're going to see that God actually sees things differently than us. His kingdom seems to be contradictory to the things that, and the ways that we see things. God's greatness is very subtle to us at times. In fact, to be honest, it's so subtle to us because of our spiritual eyesight, we don't see the greatness that God has. And so a part of this greatness is that Christ was a scapegoat. And we're going to see what true serving means. And we're going to see, as we've been seeing through the book of Mark, a clash of kingdoms. We've been seeing the way that Christ is setting up his kingdom and is going to reign. And we're seeing how hard that is for us to understand. So I believe today we're going to see some of the most essential things for our faith. We're going to see also the contrast between the demonstration of what it means to be on a self-serving mission and what it means to be on a selfless sacrificing mission. And I fully expect that these words, because they're holy and profound and they're pure and they're from God, that somewhere along the journey today that God may convict us. God may ask us, where are we at in this mission? Where are we at between two kingdoms, the kingdom that we wake up to every day and the one that he is establishing? And what is our view? I think this is maybe a greater question. What is our view of God's greatness? How do we view Christ and why is he great? Let's go to Mark 10. We're going to go to verse 32. Let's start there. It says this. And they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus walking ahead of them. And they were amazed, and those who followed were afraid. And taking the 12 again, he began to tell them what was going to happen to him, saying, "See, we're going to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles. And they will mock him and spit on him, and flog him, and kill him. And after 3 days he will rise." And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to him and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left hand, one at your left in your glory." Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism with which I'm baptized?" And they said to him, "We are able." And Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I baptize, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those whom it has been prepared." And when the 10 heard it, they began to be indignant at James and John. And Jesus called to them, and he said to them, "You know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be a slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." And they came to Jericho, and as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a great crowd, Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And many rebuked him, telling him to be silent. But he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up, he's calling you." And throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and he came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said to him, "Rabbi, let me recover my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Go your way, your faith has made you well." And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on his way. You may be seated. Here's what we see. We see they're outside of Jerusalem, and they're beginning to walk into Jerusalem. And Jesus is dead set on what's going to happen. Jesus has this steadfastness where he's about to walk into battle. And Jesus is seeing something, and he speaks in 8 future tenses here. He's saying, here's what's going to happen. This will happen. This will happen. All the way down to him dying, and then he gives the promise that he will rise again. It's a crazy setting. It's one where there is going to be a battle. And he's speaking of this, and he's telling the guys for the third time that we've seen in Mark now, he's telling them, this is what's going down. I'm telling you the mission plan. This is the way it's going to happen. Jesus has his eyes fixed on the cross. And the first thing that we see is that they don't understand this mission. They still have a perception of God, and they're making the Messiah out to be who they think he is and who they think he should be. And the first thing they do, he just told them they're going to be part of a funeral. He just told them, hey, everything's at stake here. My life's at stake. I'm going to be spit on. I'm going to be beat. I'm going to be flogged. I'm telling you what's going down up here. And in some ways, they were amazed, it says, right? And they were afraid. They're getting antsy because they are under the impression that they're going into a physical war, that Jesus is going to set up a physical kingdom. And they're getting a little antsy about it. And their perceptions are not correct. They have a distorted eyesight here because what they say is, they say to Jesus, they start pulling on him. And many scholars think that these may be his cousins, James and John. And James and John go, if this is going down like this, then how about I sit on your left and Huey here sits on your right? What do you think about that? This is after he's just told them he's going in for total battle and he's about to die. And they're going, you know what? The power and the glory that this guy possesses and who Jesus is and the things that we've seen, I want some of that. And I don't, and I would really like it to serve me. And so we see them say, hey, how about you let us in on some of the glory? And then we see that they leave Jerusalem, they go to Jericho, it's a wealthier city, and they run into this beggar. And it's a total contrasting story. We see the setup is that a battle is going down. We see those closest to Christ don't understand the battle plan. They don't understand the mission. They don't see how Jesus is repeatedly telling them the way that the kingdom will be established. And instead, we see a beggar. We see the least of these. We've been reading a lot about that. We see the least of these who says, Son of David. Recognizing who Jesus is as the true Messiah, his reaction isn't, give me some of that glory. His reaction is, gosh, you're the Messiah. Have mercy on me. And what happens to him? He recovers his eyesight. The words come out to being that he was healed, but that's an easy translation from the ancient to that he is saved, he is redeemed. It's a really tough contrast. Mark has really not been an easy place. If you call yourself a follower of Christ, being a follower of Christ, we find out that we're fairly confused a lot of times, even though we're the ones closest to Christ.
We're the ones going, how are you establishing this kingdom? Everything you're saying seems upside down. How can we get with that? And we ask these questions. And I love the way Jesus reacts. He's answering these questions. He's not saying, get away from me. That's the third time I told you. You just don't get it. He doesn't shame them. But he's walking into battle because he knows what's going to happen, and he tells them. And he has never lost sight of what his mission is. You cannot separate Jesus from his mission. They have lost sight of the cross. They've lost sight of what is to take place, even though it's been explained to them. And that's what happens. They've lost their sight. Basically, they've lost their spiritual eyesight, and Bartimaeus here in Jericho has gained his spiritual eyesight. Very simple, quick lesson, right? If we are to regain our sight back, if we are losing our way, we focus on this cross. We focus back on the true mission of what Jesus is about. When we are not, we get swayed and we get pulled into an alternative kingdom, the one that is most prevalent. God is calling us. If you have heard that call, then God is calling you into this mission. God is asking us to be steadfast with him in this mission. Let's look at verse 35. Verse 35 says, and James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to him and said to him, Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. Teacher, we want you to do whatever we ask of you. And he said to them, what do you want for me to do? What do you want me to do for you? And they said to him, grant us to sit one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory. Though my kids don't drive my car, though my kids don't pay for the tune-ups, they don't pay for the gas, they often ask for the best seat. Shotgun! This is the way I'm seeing the disciples. Hey, I'm going to die, blah, blah, blah. Shotgun! Shotgun glory. It's just project me, completely just catapult me, put me in the best seat. That's absolutely what's going on. It says the other guys got indignant. And that happens in, if you've seen our van, we have this white GMC van. The Garmin family truckster looks like a company mobile, right? It looks like a company van. It's so nondescript. But what happens is they want that spot. They're all wrestling for whatever. I mean, sometimes it's the middle seat, it's the front seat, or whatever. And growing up, me and my buddies, I mean, it was always shotgun. And you see Jesus. Can you see this picture? Jesus is seeing what's going to happen. Jesus is establishing his kingdom. He's come here to complete the mission. He is under the Father's will. He is completely surrendered to that, to be the servant. He's coming to serve. His total mindset is underneath. He's coming underneath mankind, and it's going to culminate at this point, which we'll talk about in a second. And as he says, and he describes even the leadership of the day, he says, they lord over, the Gentiles lord over, they exploit, they demonstrate this overpowering. And then he says, but this, my kingdom, is coming from below. I'm coming to serve all. I'm coming to be a ransom. Shotgun. Shotgun. I think, honestly, when I read this scripture, I think, are we walking along with God and going, can I use some of your power and glory for me? Is it possible for me on the way to build a little kingdom? Could you make me a little bit popular? Is there a seat of authority for me? The truth is if we were really honest, I think we have to be honest to go, When we travel with God, we ask for special favors, and we want to be set apart a little differently according to the other kingdom. The kingdom that God calls us to is one of selfless serving and sacrifice. We want notoriety. I've never seen it worse, and I 12 years in the business world, I've never seen it worse than with guys that do what I do. Pastors want recognition a lot. They want to be popular. They want to be in the right place. They want people to notice what they're doing. I think if the guys who are probably reading their Bible the most and maybe praying the most, if they're struggling with that, I'm thinking we're all struggling with that. I struggle with that. Hey, God, how about you peel off a little bit of power for me? How about some shotgun glory?